Now, if you've checked your news sheet, you'll realise that we're starting a new series, a sermon series this evening, which is going to take us over the next 11 or 12 weeks, I think. And we're turning back to the Old Testament. And we're going back to a book that in some ways is a bit of an enigma, because it's part historical and it's part prophecy. We're going to be looking at the book of Daniel, which, not too surprisingly, follows the life of Daniel. He was an Israelite. He was taken into exile in Babylon as a boy, perhaps as about a teenager. And there he lived most of his life, right through till old age, probably into his 80s and 90s. And actually, we don't really know an awful lot about Daniel. All we really know is that he was from maybe the royal household of some sort. He was maybe nobility, it tells us in these early verses. But it doesn't tell us anything more than that. And it's a time when the Jews had been through a whole series of kings. Some of them had been good, and some of them had been bad. And the king they've got now was King Jehoiakim, who was a bad king. And because of that, Judah was exiled into Babylonia under King Nebuchadnezzar, because they'd disobeyed God's word about the rules that had been set for things like the Sabbath and for idolatry. So we're talking about perhaps 600 years before Christ, about 600 BC. We're not entirely sure who the author of Daniel is. It probably is Daniel himself. But there is some debate about whether part of it might have been written by somebody else. There's something that's quite strange that we don't realise as we're reading it through in our NIV is the language it was written in. Because that part of it was written in Hebrew, so that's the first chapter or two, and the last 8 to 12 chapters. But the rest of it's actually written in Aramaic, which was, as we'll see, a common language at that time. We're not sure why that was the case. Maybe that does indicate that there were two authors for the book. As we'll see as we go through it over the next couple of weeks, the first part of the book is probably better known to us than the second part, because the first part is all stories that perhaps we actually learnt in Sunday school. They're quite familiar, aren't they? The writing on the wall at Belshazzar's feast. Daniel's friends in the fiery furnace. Daniel himself in the lion's den. And Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, which are interpreted by Daniel. And so that part of it is perhaps more familiar to us than the second part, which is all to do with prophecy about the nation of Israel. And throughout it all, really, the main theme is God's sovereignty, that he is the God who's in control. In chapter 5, verse 21, it says that the Most High God is sovereign over the kingdoms of man. So with that bit of background, Sue's going to come up and read chapter 1. I've apologised to Sue because it's full of names, but I'm sure we'll all do well.
In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia, and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude of every kind of learning, well informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. And the chief official gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other men for your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Ananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in according with what you see." So he agreed to do this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the food. So the royal guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. For these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Sue. Well, as Martin has already noted in our prayers, Brexit is done. Hurrah! But of course it's not done really, is it? It's not finished, because we've got a whole year of negotiations to go through. We've got all sorts of agreements to be reached, and neither side in those is probably going to get everything that they want. So we're probably going to hear about red lines, aren't we? Red lines across which we can't pass. We certainly heard that last year when we were still negotiating the initial part of Brexit. Where are we going to compromise in our negotiations, perhaps, over this coming year? Where should we stand firm, and when should we give way? And of course, it's not just Brexit, is it? That's true of so many decisions that we have to make, even day-to-day decisions. Sometimes the decisions have a right and a wrong, don't they? It's quite clear to us which way is the right way to go, which way is the wrong way to go. But sometimes there's a bit of doubt in between, isn't there? Sometimes perhaps we have to compromise. Sometimes things are okay and sometimes they're perhaps not okay. And of course, our society is changing really fast, isn't it? And things that were perhaps unheard of just a few years ago have now become commonplace. I mean, the obvious one is communication. Now, I don't know about you, but how did we manage before we had mobile phones? When I started work, I remember having to phone home by going to the local phone box to make a call. We certainly didn't have a mobile phone, did we? But just this week, it's been said that 50% of 10-year-olds have smartphones. And that's a generation that's grown up with the internet, of course, isn't it? And we know that the internet is great for certain things, isn't it? For knowledge, knowledge transfer and all that sort of thing, it's great. But it perhaps also has negative things, doesn't it? It's not all positive. It's incredible the amount of pages on the internet that actually contain pornography for a start. And what about the dark web? And we started hearing about trolls, haven't we, that on social media. So do we embrace it all or do we have to make a stand? We need to know where our red lines are, don't we? And of course, change nearly always seems to bring complication. Things don't ever seem to get simpler, do they? I don't know about you, but nearly every problem that comes up seems to be more complicated than one before. Ethical questions particularly can be very difficult, can't they? And nowadays it's often hard to speak out or to make a stand without being labelled as a bigot or perhaps some sort of a phobe, a homophobe or whatever. Or even receiving threats. There were MPs who didn't re-stand in the recent general election, weren't there, because of death threats to them and their families. I think it actually even applied to our own MP. People seem to be getting more angry, don't they? And I think in some ways this is spurred on by the media, the papers. How often do you see the title that says that somebody expressed fury at such and such? Now to me, fury, that sort of brings up a picture of somebody with a red face and steam coming out of their ears. But now I think it just means somebody's mildly upset. You can't get annoyed anymore, can you? You have to be incandescent with rage. Well, enough of this ranting anyway. Let's get on to Daniel's story. Because what we want to see is how he coped with fundamental changes in his life. You remember the context? The Babylonians and their king Nebuchadnezzar had besieged Jerusalem starting in around about 605 BC. And they'd taken many of the Israelites into exile over a period of about 10 years. And Daniel was in amongst that first batch with his mates Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah. Now we don't know exactly, but we're guessing that they were probably around about teenage years, maybe late teens, 16, 17 something. But certainly they were strong and healthy. In verse 4 it tells us about the sort of men that were chosen. Without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well informed, quick to understand and qualified to serve in the king's palace. Well, they were clearly wonderful young men, but they were going to be taken away from their own surroundings, all that they knew, and they were going to be brought in as slaves to work in the palace of the king. It's actually quite similar, isn't it, to the story of Joseph that we're very familiar with. But thinking about that, isn't that a risky thing for the king to do? To take some of the prime of the young people from his enemies, bring them into his palace and train them up and indoctrinate them? I think that's quite a risky thing to do, really. And maybe it just shows some of the king's arrogance that he thought that he'd be able to actually do that. He'd get these young, impressionable Israelites and he'd press them into service. And they'd be putting aside their God and following his. But of course, these young Israelites were intent on remaining faithful to God. They were familiar with, I suspect, the scripture that I think we used early in the year as a memory verse. Joshua 24 verse 15. As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. And that's what these young men were intent on doing. They faced a number of huge challenges, which of those could have led them astray if they'd chosen to compromise. So let's think about those challenges. The first one was fairly obvious. They were in new surroundings. They'd been taken from their life in Jerusalem Now, if they were in the royal family and nobility, that may have been a life of comfort. They may have had power. They may have had trappings of wealth. And here they were now in this foreign land. They were in a hostile environment. They may have been in straitened circumstances. We don't know how they were kept in the court for the king, but how they were, we don't know. It was certainly going to be very different to the Jerusalem that they come from. And of course, they hadn't any choice really about where they were. They were hostages. In effect, they were in captivity. And it was a real new culture. The Jewish temple that they'd been accustomed to was now replaced by other buildings with images and idols. There was pagan worship. Things like even the architecture would probably have been completely different. And certainly the customs of the people were very different. And they had to make choices about how much of that culture they were going to embrace. Well, we'll see in future weeks that Daniel was willing to make a stand when it came to worship. He wasn't willing to bow down and worship any but the one true God. What about us? We probably didn't have much choice over where we were born. I suspect not, anyway. And I don't know about you, but I'm thankful that God placed us, or placed me anyway, in our country, in Britain. If you think about it, we're very cosseted here, if that's the word. You know, we don't have the extremes of so many other places in the world, do we? Even the extremes of weather. You know, we had a bit of wind today, but we don't get what a lot of other places in the world have. We don't have the extremes of poverty that other people have. We don't have the extremes of oppression that other people have around the world. So we're perhaps very fortunate that we live in a safe environment, a very free environment, and we're able to enjoy that, aren't we? We're able to take in that culture. But within that, we may be able to make some choices about where we live. And of course, that's based on maybe our family, our work. That often determines where we're going to live, doesn't it? Sometimes it's our interests. Sometimes it's the lifestyle we actually want. But wherever we are in this world. And Jesus talked about his people being in the world, but not of it. There are many bad things in this world. And what he was warning was that we shouldn't be sucked into that badness. If we're to serve the Lord, we need to separate ourselves, don't we, from injustice and worldliness and corruption of power, selfishness. We need to work to improve our society and our environment and stand against that injustice and wrongdoing and display Christian values. So in a way, we do face a very similar situation to Daniel. The environment in which we now live, the way that society here is changing. And of course, new culture as well. Daniel and his mates were to be taught the new languages and literature of the Babylonians. Now that was going to be quite different to what they'd been brought up with. The Hebrew language that they'd been taught and they'd used was going to be replaced by Sumerian and Akkadian cuneiform. I have to say, I have no idea what that is. Other than it's a complicated syllabic writing system used for classical literature. So there you go. If you want to go home and study a bit of Sumerian, you're very welcome to do so. But that was one of the languages that they were going to be used when they were studying this Babylonian literature. And the other language they were going to have to learn was Aramaic, which was used for sort of the everyday communication in Babylon. If you think about that country was a real mix of races because they brought people in from all over the place. And so there was a real mix of languages and they'd settled on Aramaic as one of the languages that was going to be used in everyday speech. And of course it's one of the languages that Jesus spoke when he came. So there's an element of brainwashing here for Daniel, wasn't there? They were going to have to forget all about the old Jewish wisdom and language that they were brought up with, and they were going to have to replace it with Babylonian wisdom and history. They were going to have to take on new languages if they wanted to communicate with the people. They were going to have to conform to Babylonian society. Well, that's a huge challenge for us today as well, isn't it? Even to keep up with changes in our society. There is massive pressure for us to conform, especially for our young people. I don't know about you, but for us oldies, it's a challenge enough just to understand what they're talking about. When things like, words like sick, bad and dope apparently all mean good. And we need to be more woke. Now, I thought that was just something to do with being awake. But oh no. No, it means we need to be aware of social injustice, particularly racism and prejudice. And I would agree, we should be. So you need to be more woke, folks. Being awake is probably good enough, actually, isn't it? Well, Daniel and his friends were determined not to be totally sucked into that new society. They wanted to serve the Lord, and they needed to uphold his principles and his teaching and put that into practice. How much more do we need to be on our guard in this modern world, not to be tricked into conforming in a society we know to be flawed? Now, the third major problem that they faced was one of diet. On the face of it, the king was being quite generous. He was satisfying their needs in a generous way by giving them a daily amount of food from the king's own table. So it would have been, you would assume, it would have been the best sort of food. But of course the Jews had many rules about food, what they could and they couldn't eat, and how it was to be prepared. If you go back into Leviticus chapter 11, there's a whole list of animals and birds there that you were allowed to eat and ones that you weren't allowed to eat. It tickled me a little bit. When I used to birdwatch some years ago with a chap, he used to say he'd got two different lists of birds. One for the ones that he'd seen and one for the ones he'd eaten. So eating the wrong thing would make a person unclean before God. And the food offered to Daniel would have been breaking those rules and would have made him unclean in the eyes of God. It hadn't been prepared correctly. It wasn't kosher. It had been offered to idols. And Daniel wasn't prepared to compromise on this point. So he went veggie, as that would break no rules. And it sounds like a great advertisement for vegetarianism, doesn't it? Because they thrived. And nowadays, people seem to be much more aware of what we eat. Whether we're going to go vegetarian, whether we're going to go vegan, whether we're going to be pescatarian, is it? Whether we're going to eat locally so that we can cut our food miles. Whether we're going to reduce red meat intake to halt climate change. Well, actually what we're doing is we're controlling and being discerning about what goes into our bodies, aren't we? And we need to do that not just for food. We need to do that for other things too. Just consider the media. We need to be more discerning, don't we, about what we watch. Perhaps what we read or what we listen to. Is it honouring to God? Or is it feeding us stuff that's actually unclean or unwholesome? And we need to be on our guard, not to be influenced by what everyone else says and does. And this is an area, isn't it, where we perhaps have to make daily choices about what is good and wholesome, what's unclean. Perhaps the final way in this chapter that Nebuchadnezzar attempts to influence and indoctrinate our four young heroes was by giving them new names. Well, what's in a name? Somehow people seem to suit their names. Have you noticed that? People seem to grow into their names, don't they? Names seem to be very appropriate for people. And sometimes people tend to use their middle names. I mean, just looking around now, I can think of two or three people who are known by their middle name and not their first name. Well, of course, in Israelite culture, the name carried real meaning. And Nebuchadnezzar would have known that. So he changed their Hebrew godly names to names relating to his pagan gods. So from Daniel, which means God is my judge, he changed the name to Belteshazzar, which means Bel will protect. Hananiah, which means God is gracious, was changed to Shadrach, which means inspiration of the sun, apparently. Mishael, which means God is without equal, was changed to Meshach, which means belong to Aku, which is one of the pagan gods. And Azariah, which means the Lord is my helper, was changed to Abednego, which means servant of Nego, who was presumably another of the pagan gods. Nebuchadnezzar was trying to change their identity, wasn't he? But as we follow on the story of Daniel, we see that he failed. Well, the devil tries all kinds of ways of changing who we are. But we must always be aware and remember what we are. We're children of God because of the great love the Lord has lavished on us. If I just quickly find 1 John chapter 3. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. The reason that the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Dear friends, now that we are children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Yet as Christians, we are children of God, aren't we? And the devil can't change that. He can't change that identity. So despite all of these problems and the temptations to compromise that our four heroes were given, they were determined to stay strong and resolute and serve God. They made a stand when their new diet was offered to them because they felt it would have defiled them. And obviously they didn't actually know it, but they were following almost exactly the instructions given by Paul in Romans chapter 12. Therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. They showed great loyalty, didn't they, and commitment to God, not only in these early stages, but throughout their exile in Babylon. And as we'll learn a little bit later on in chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego were willing to go into the fiery furnace rather than compromise. And Daniel himself risked death in the lion's den rather than compromise. And amazingly, he was about 80. He was 80 plus at that time. They were willing to trust and obey. Trust that whatever they faced in the world, their God would never desert them. Their obedience would be rewarded. And so it was. By being faithful to God, their diet led them to being healthier and better nourished than the others. And God blessed them with knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. They gained respect in this new hostile environment without compromising their love and service to the one true God. So yes, we face challenges and temptations every day, don't we? probably not as extreme as those faced by Daniel, but ones that can lead us to compromise and to be disobedient to God. Daniel and his friends determined to be faithful to God, not to conform to the ungodliness that surrounded them. And God remained faithful to them, as he does to us too. No matter what this world throws at us, God will never let us down. His promises are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. So may he give us the power and resolve not to compromise, to shun what we know to be ungodly, and to serve the Lord. Amen.